Hello, and welcome to the Wizard's Respite Sanctorum, a show that in which we dive into all things CTRPG. Today, we are going to be talking about characters, our favorite characters, what we think about them, what makes them tick. But as always, I am not alone. I am joined with my ever-present co-host, Zach. Zach, how are you doing?
Hello, everybody. I'm Zach Rye with Old Man Gaming. Happy to be here, as usual. Super excited. Before we do jump into things, I do want to just really quickly shout out Backdraft. He commented on our last video and just said, "That's right, Zach, fear the garage." He's also in the garage game. I do not fear the garage. Sometimes I fear what may live inside it, though. I'm super excited to be here. Character creation is something I love as RPGs. It's probably my favorite aspect of it on either side, both game master and player. And I know we've been kind of, the last couple of weeks, we've been kind of doing these like core concepts of gaming episodes, and I'm really excited to do this one.
Me too. And one thing of note, you know, not to already get into a random tangent on the show this early, but you and I both, we met over, you know, a solo RPG, which was primarily built around building characters. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I also love. We both really love the act of building characters. There have been some really fun sessions that I've had way back in the day where all you do is, like, it's session zero, build a character from scratch, yeah, and then tinker with how they know each other, play around with, you know, like the backstories before you get into the game. Mm-hmm. So it can be a lot of fun if you're into RPGs. You know, there's got to be at least a small part of you that just loves the character creation process.
You know, I'll see your tangent and raise you a tangent. on the gaming side of things, for my channel, the video game side, I don't like games without character creators anymore. I've kind of gotten to an area in my life where, like, I mean, I'm not going to say I won't play them or anything, because both of the games that I'm really into right now are, you know, already pre-made characters, but, like, it loses points for me without, if it doesn't have the character creator. I want to have that creative element, you know, in all my things. Sure. All my things, so I am excited. And, yeah, we did meet over last T-Shop, didn't we?
Yeah.
See, yeah, and good things do come out at Twitter/X on occasion, because this partnership only happened because of that.
Yeah, that's how we kind of like touch base with each other. And that game, like, you play a character that just is constantly meeting new characters.
Yep.
So every round, you're coming up with a new character.
Yes.
And it gives you prompts and all this stuff to help that. But, you know, it's writing. It's mm-hmm. imagination. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, should we jump into the first part of our?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so we're going to start off with naming our favorite characters that we have played. So this one was a little hard for me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. The first couple was really easy to come up with. I was going to try and come up with three, and I do have three. But after it gets past, like, the first couple, like, it's like, okay, how do I choose one of my children?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It gets very hard too, because both of us are kind of, I don't want to, like, eternally, but forever GMs. I would say on a whole, the two of us have game mastered more than we have played. In our life, percentage wise, even if we're getting a lot of playtime now or whatever, I think overall in our years of existence on the planet, we have both game mastered more than we played. So that gets tough. It gets really tough to find that that character. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It really does. Also, we've been doing this in one manner or another since we were kids.
Yeah.
The type of character that I, there was a character I loved as a child that I played. That being said, I was 12. You know, I would not play that character in the same way that I did back then. Now I have fond memories of that character.
Right.
But you know, like, taste change, and, like, when it comes to choosing your tops, do I go with my nostalgia, with my rose-colored tints, or do I go with something that today, you know, maybe more recently I've come up with that really has a lot more depth and insight and more fleshed out as a character that I've really played?
Does that make sense? It makes a lot of sense. I'm the same way. I kind of like nowadays when I sit down to play a character, I am really looking for like how do I play that character? What that character's inspirations are? Like how that character's going to fit in the world? What made that character the way the character is? Those are the things I look at. When I was a kid, it was like, I want to drive that mech. You know, that one looks cool. And I'll just make a character to do that. I think that like there, it's very different now than it was back then. Also, when you're a kid, and other people might have different experiences with this. For me, when I was a kid, I could only ever really play myself. Like no matter how much I tried, when it came to actually playing a character, it was just me. It just came down to me in this game, and how I would react to things. Whereas nowadays. And I'll get to it when I list some of my favorite characters. Nowadays, I feel like I'm doing some of the best character work I've ever done with my characters. I mean, I guess characters, but I mean like character from the perspective of like this person is some like indistinguishable from me in real life, you know? And that is extremely fun for me to try and do that and to try and pull that off.
Yeah. It definitely changes over time in that manner because I think you also kind of develop more life skills.
Yeah,
you know, and you as a person, between you know when you were first started playing this as a young man or a kid, have gotten a lot more insight into what people are like and how to have what you're like versus what other people are like and why. Yeah. And the why is a big question there. But should we go ahead and jump into our top favorite?
Let's do it.
Okay. So should we do a countdown from three to one?
I think I can come up with three.
Okay. Yeah.
I definitely had two specific ones in mind, but I think I could do three.
That was the thing. I had the hardest time coming up with a third. The first two were pretty easy. The third one was like, oh, crap. Okay. So my third was actually going to be I have two games that characters I have played with you on here, Zach. Because again, like you said, forever GM. Most recently have played characters more than I have in like one.
You're welcome.
Right now,
You're welcome.
Because I played in so many of your games right now. Whereas back in the past, it'd be like, okay, I get to play a character once a decade. Tex the armadillo and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
More power to you, sir.
Like we started off with character creation. We built that character slowly. Once I got in the character creation process, once we rolled what my animal mutation would be in this Teenage Mutant thing, it clicked. Like I just armadillo. I live in Austin, Texas. And I just know armadillos. I know Texas. And it had to be Tex the armadillo. The cowboy, man. And as soon as that hit my mind, as soon as that I touched base with that, I just knew this guy.
Yeah.
John Wayne, classic good guy, golden age Western. And that's something that we're going to get into more in the next section. But that, like, good guy persona was something that I feel like is missing so often in movies and shows these days. The classic hero.
Yeah.
And I miss it. I miss it a lot. And I love playing that in text. I just love it so much. It gives something to my life that I need.
Well, it was a big thing about 80s cartoons, too, was you always had the very, like, hero-y heroes, you know?
Right.
And I think that, like, the TMNT game is so much fun to play. Like, we all live in this world. Permit me to be a digressive slightly. We live in this world that's just so much conflict and people screaming at each other. And, you look at the politics, everybody's yelling at each other there, and nobody's really right. Just everybody's always wrong all the time, basically. And they just scream at each other about it all the time. TMNT, I don't know what it is about that stream, but, like, we all sit down and we just have fun. There's no weird undertow, there's no political disdain, there's no, like, there, and not even, like, political stuff in the real world. I mean, like, just, like, in the game, it's just fun. It's just fun. It's like we could all sit down and crack open a beer and play role-playing games. I need it, too, for the same reason, because you just, you come away, we get on this podcast, and I'm not even just talking about, like, politics. Like, we get on this podcast, we talk about the terrible shit that Hasbro does, and then I get on the video game podcast, I talk about the terrible shit that every AAA game company does, and you end up, like, in and then you go and you hang out with your friends, and they want to talk about terrible shit. It's become this thing, it's just sucks, just so much stuff sucks on the internet. Oh, yeah. I just wish everybody would realize that everything on the internet is bullshit. Even this is bullshit. It's just all bullshit. Everything. All of it. And even the stuff that isn't bullshit, you don't understand the context because you weren't there, so it's just bullshit. But, I'm sorry, that tangent got a little out of control. I'm going to reel it back in. But what I'm saying is, like, TMNT is just, like, so... Hey, everybody just sit down and have fun for 2 hours, pretend to be some animals in an 80s cartoon show. It's just like even when TMNT gets serious, because there have been some definite, like, emotional moments with the girls, because there's the three girls who basically been abused by Braddock their entire lives, and you guys are their protectors. So there's definitely been some emotional moments with that. Even with that, it's never to a point where, like, God, I'd rather be anywhere but here. You know what I mean? Like, it's always just fun. And God, does everybody need just a little bit of fun in their life nowadays? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I did go off the rails there. I'm sorry, everybody. I just, like, the core of it is TMNT is just so much fun. I'm so glad that Tex brings that fun to you, because that game is a game. Like, every time we have to move that game, I am seriously saddened. Even though it's a stream, and I find it more trying than the recording stuff, I'm saddened, because that's 2 hours of just pure silly fun, you know?
Absolutely. And you know, like, pure silly fun, yeah, but at the same time, like, there's still structure to it. It's not one of those really, like, completely off the wall, nothing ever makes sense kind of games.
Yeah, yeah.
But it does feel more like the 80s hero cartoon,
right?
Like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or any of them, really. Like, where there's a goal, you're trying to accomplish it. The good guys versus the bad guys, and the good guys are the good guys. The bad guys are the bad guys.
They're bad, yeah. I agree. Like, that's what I was trying to get to. Like, it's not like wacky Looney Tunes stuff, but it's not something that's ever going to cause you physical or mental stress.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So,
And that's what, and, you know, Tex brings that to my life. That's why he's definitely made my top three list.
Right.
So, Zach, shooting back at the year, what's your,
okay.
Do you have a third? Can you think of a third?
Oh, yeah. So are we going three to number one?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So in that case, third, then I got to reverse what I was going to say. This is tough. But all of mine are characters that make me feel like I'm in the moment, right? So I have kind of like a control freak kind of brain to where, like, anytime I'm playing in a game, I'm just thinking in my head, like, this is what I do with the story. Why isn't he doing this, you know? So, like, and that's not a shot at the Game Masters. It's just how my brain works. It's why I end up a Game Master a lot.
Right.
You know, which is funny, because there's so many of my games I've created to have, like, everybody be Game Master. But, like, Like, even with Upper Hand, like, everybody's supposed to be a booker in that, and I just end up booking everything because I was like, well, why don't you do this, you know?
Right.
And that's my own ish. But, like, all of my characters are characters that, like, emotionally pull me out of that and force me to be present and in the moment and not thinking about, like, where the character's going or what the character's doing, but instead be thinking about, like, what's happening to the character and what the character would be feeling. So, I have told, I think I've talked about on this channel before about my superhero concept, my core concept of superhero games, which I had done, where you do it reality-based. So it's based off the person who is playing. You need younger chaps, usually, to do this. That person gains superpowers in a superhero world, right? And then you play individually. So, like, you would not be making a character, so to speak. You would be showing up as, like, if you played, you'd be showing up as Ash, and you would request to me what your power was, and then we would work through your origin story, basically. That would be your first session. So that attaches you to the character more because it's you, you know?
Right.
For me, I have to give it up, and there was two that I was thinking about, because these are the older characters. I had a really hard time picking between the two of them, but this is the one, and it was me, but it was a friend of mine who started also game mastering within that superhero world as well, just so that basically the people who came over had more stuff to do. So basically, he would run a session upstairs, I'd run a session downstairs, they'd come over, they'd play with me for an hour, then when their time was up, they'd go upstairs and play with him for an hour, basically. But he would run for me. However, we had already been doing this for like 6 months, 8 months, something like that, so the superhero world was well established by that point. So we couldn't just say, Zach gets superpowers now. Because Zach didn't really like... Like, where has Zach been? Plus, Zach's brother was in the game, so Zach's brother's doing this. Why isn't that... You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't...
Yeah.
So, we made this character...
Continuity wouldn't line up.
Yeah. So, we made this character, and I have, I don't want to say troubled. I'm very estranged with my parents. I don't talk to my mom, haven't talked to her in, I want to say, like, almost 10 years now. And whenever I've talked to her, it's been a terrible relationship. And I talk to my dad, but it's very rare. He doesn't come to visit, this sort of thing. It's like a phone call on birthday sort of thing. So we made a character, and basically he was like, well, how would this be different from you? And I'm like, what if this Zach, like Nick moves out, goes and does his superhero thing, this Zach gets stuck with the mom and stays with the mom instead of, like, moving out and telling her to go F herself, and then just becomes a miserable dick and has just so much rage and anger about the world. So this created the punk, which is my superhero character who I loved. Basically, here's what he did. I got so into this. So he's just angry. His whole starting point for this character was anger. Like, I just need to punch things. I need to punch them hard, and I need to punch them a lot. So I need to go to a place to punch things. So he goes to Detroit. He just moves to Detroit with just a sack on his back. Like, just that's it. Like, he doesn't even know what he's going to do. He's just going to find people to punch. Detroit is in a shitty way. I'm from Michigan originally, so... It just made sense. So then we started kind of workshopping it because he wasn't going to be a superhero. He wasn't going to get superpowers. He was going to be a vigilante. So what does he do? So basically what I would do to get new superpowers, I of course had to have the in-game points or whatever, but I would look up on YouTube how to make the thing I wanted to make out of junk, and then I would have to send it to my game master Scott and be like, he's gonna make this. So I had soda pop bottles that would explode and make smoke bombs. I had this weird what else did I have? I had a gas mask that I had made so that I could breathe out of it, and his costume was just like a ripped up hoodie over a gas mask and a backpack of just junk that he had repurposed into Batman gadgets. So he was like a trash panda. And, like, Scott loved it so much.
I love this guy.
Oh, he's so great. He's such a great version. Scott loved it so much. Like, the first person he meets is this old dude who runs a junkyard. And the junkyard guy hires him. So, by day, he lives at a junkyard and works at a junkyard. And then by night, he puts on the punk gear and beats up criminals. And what's even more fun is, like, as the game progressed, because we actually played this one a lot, as the game progressed, he ends up becoming more of a superhero, and less is just a, like, he actually gets to a point where he's like, no, I've got to save Detroit. Like, he actually gets, like, emotionally attached to the city and the people and trying to actually turn it around. It was just such a great turnaround. We never actually really finished it. We just played a bunch. You never really finish a superhero story anyway. But we just, unless he dies. Like, there's no real finishing it. We played it a lot, and man, I loved him. He was so angry and angsty. But he would, every time, like, and it was so much fun in the superhero world to, like, how do I fight something? Like, he had to fight, like, a Superman-type character once. And so he had to, like, how do I take that guy down, you know? And I ended up building, an electrocution chamber, basically, to try and take him out. Like, stuff like that. I just, so much fun to play that character, play that game.
See, and you just said something that, like, I think touches really great on this, is you have this great character that started off with, like, basically just piecing together gizmos from trash.
Yeah.
And eventually that he had to go up against a Superman level character. He had to save Detroit. He had this big arc and he got more emotionally invested in
it.
It's like all of that energy that you put into that character laid the groundwork for a great story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He ended up getting in an Avengers group too. It was that universe's Avengers. But what was interesting was they were all vigilantes. Like, every last one of them ended up being vigilantes, they were formed to fight superhumans, basically. And it was, like, me, and this other guy was a mecha pilot. Philbilly's character in that, I always love Philbilly's superhero character because he's basically Cars. He's Batman in Cars. Like, if Batman was centered around the Batmobile and things like that, that's what he'd be, and it was Octane. Loved running games of Octane for him for bad guys and stuff. They're so much fun because it was all car chases and car fights and stuff. But he was more of a Punisher type, lethal enforcer character, but like in like badass cars. So he protected like highways. So it was him. And then we had a detective, another character that was like a detective. And like our big Thanos moment was we had to fight like a superhuman, like an extremely powerful superhuman. So it was a lot of fun. But what was funny in that group, Punk was the one, because when we all beat up the superhuman, like everybody was like, she's too powerful, we have to kill her. And Punk was the one who stopped him. Punk was the one like, no, I'll fight any of you to the death because I'm not going to kill just to kill, which is just such a turnaround. And like, they didn't really realize it at the time, and that's not their fault, but they didn't really realize it at the time that like that was a huge character moment for Punk, because he was just a violent sociopath to start the game, and now he was the voice of like pacifism in this epic moment at the end where you just expect him to kill, you know. It was very interesting game. Sorry, that's awesome. I ate up way too much time on that one.
No, that was exciting. See, that's what I'm talking about, though. Like, I would love to have like watched a movie with these characters. Just listening to you talk about them, and it's because the characters are so like, I don't know. You build these characters, and they're so, character is vital to a story. You know,
yeah, it is. It really is.
And once you have that character, obviously you have a story. I'm enthralled. I'm enthralled with this story that you shot out there. Just because the character sounds cool, and I haven't seen the whole arc, but just the bits I have heard is like, oh, that's neat. Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it definitely lives in infamy in my brain. That one does.
Oh yeah,
I can't get rid of it.
Some of these definitely do. My number one character is that these characters live with you.
Yeah,
there's that back there somewhere talking to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Should we move on to number two?
Yeah.
All right. So, again, one of the games that I'm playing in with you, Alfred Whitecastle, Alistair / Alistair Creedmoor.
I feel like I'm double winning at the Oscars right now. I don't know that I deserve. Alfred is fun to watch, though.
Alfred and my number one pick were the two that my mind automatically went to. Number three was kind of hard for me to figure out, like, because there's so many, and it's like, okay, it's starting to get like kind of a lot. But number two, Alfred. He has, so when I built Alfred back to character creation all the way at the beginning, I read through all of the many, many, many options of races and backgrounds and planets that my character could have come from for Astral Drive. Mm-hmm. And then I found Vampire. And it said in there, essentially, you know, they get a bit more on power level. But as a result, to balance that out, the entire galaxy wants to kill them because they are essentially monsters.
Yeah.
They're the only race in the entire pantheon of races that I could have picked from that had anything like that. They all had their own unique thing. But that sounded interesting. That sounded like okay, this is going to take some work. And it has. which is a good thing. It has put me through my paces like no other character has in an RPG, because any moment in time, my true identity is revealed as being a vampire, the entire galaxy will descend upon me.
Yeah.
As soon as I am known, as soon as people start realizing what I am, they're coming for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that has pushed me so hard in role playing. In the moment, in the game, like you were saying, a character that draws you out of being a player, or just thinking, well, why is the GM doing this, or where's the story going, or if I was going to use this mechanic, can I get away with this? Any character has drawn me out of that mindset. It has been Alfred 100%. I am always looking for that angle in the social interaction. How are they going to find me? How are they going to like come at me? And it has just been so much fun having to work that hard. And like I've said, you know, there's been multiple situations where my heart is pounding in the game, but not in combat, all in the social situations, because I'm always afraid that they're going to find out and I'm going to be murdered.
I love Alfred. I think that what's really fun about Alfred is, and I think you've said his real name on the show before, correct?
Yeah, I have.
Alistair...
Creedmoor.
Nobody knew he was a vampire for the first, like, everybody knew there was something weird about you, but I think it was the first, I don't think it was until, like, I want to say episode 17, 18, before anybody, like, officially straight up knew you were a vampire. And I was always impressed with your ability to keep that, like, close to your chest and hidden. And in fairness, Philbilly had suspicions about it, because we had started the character creation process with the two of you together, and you had been leaning towards vampire. And then he dropped out of the call. Because he was like, he had to do something, and I was like, well, I'll just make your character with you tomorrow. And it actually worked out better that everybody kind of, like, made their characters separate and weren't kind of, like, influenced by anybody else. But, like, the fact that, like, nobody really knew what you were for the longest time was just so exciting to me. I thought it was really good how we had pulled that off, to be honest. And I do love Alistair.
I think so, too. That was a lot of fun to do. I tried to drop a few, not really hints, but, like, more breadcrumbs that you could maybe look back on, like, where he would say something where he's just like, why would a guy in this situation say that? That doesn't seem right. But then when you look later on back at it through the lens of, oh, he's a vampire, now that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's just fun. It's fun to think about things like that.
It is. It really is. It's very exciting. I do love Alistair. He's a really cool character. And he is... I love, too, that he just keeps getting himself deeper, too. Like, now he's in bed with Taya, as well as his original person, which we still haven't even seen on the show. The only person who knows about the person who recruited you in the first place is you. Right. But, like, he's in bed with Ty Valk now, which is great. And he's so much fun. So much fun.
He is a lot of fun. I love that guy. So who's your number two?
This was really tough to pick between the top two for me. They're both recent characters, but I had to finally pick based on the finality of one of the characters. So my number two is Cypress Bomani. Cypress Bomani is a character I'm playing right now, and in my opinion, he is the absolute best character work I've ever done in a role-playing game ever. He is a Egyptian fellow who runs a street gang that deals in drugs, firearms, and cars. And prostitutes. No. It's him. And he is also a vampire. He is a follower of Set in Vampire the Masquerade. Exactly. It's not an NPC. We've talked about this before. I tend to, like, make NPC characters, almost. And what was funny is my game master, Johnny, was actually like, it is sickeningly weird how easy you're going to fit in that game when I went to play that game. he was like, when I gave him the character, he was like, it is sickeningly weird how well you fit into this world. And I really did. But yeah, he has a cane. He's got like red dreadlocks and sunglasses on at all times, even in the night. And he talks real low like this. And he's just a terrible person. I'm not a terrible person, but like I think he is the most different from me in a lot of ways. Even my like he just doesn't make any knee-jerk reactions. He's very calm and collective, even when everything's falling apart around him. He doesn't have a ton of empathy where I do. He's just a very interesting character. He is the least like me of any character I've ever created. And I feel like that's why I'm so proud of him, because I'm playing him. I think I'm playing him very well for what he is. And for me to play him very well is kind of an honor to myself. You know what I mean? Like, and not to pat myself on the back, but I feel like...
No, you're proud of the performance that you're doing.
Yeah, I feel like it. I feel like it. And he has a lot going on. And it's interesting, too, because he's also developing. And the only reason he's not my number one is because I haven't seen where he goes, you know? There's a lot of things that are still changing about him. There is a character, like his head prostitute that he's minorly, like, one of the only people who knows he's a vampire has been obsessed with being a vampire. So there's been this weird kind of like vampiric, almost love relationship between the two of them, which isn't in his character, but it's this slow kind of like build to him kind of letting her in sort of thing. I love Cypress Bomani. He is crazy to play.
Sounds like a really fun character. And like, just to touch real quick on what you had mentioned, this most unlike you as an individual person in real life kind of character aspect.
Yeah.
I think sometimes playing those types of characters can be really cathartic.
It can. It really can.
My top two, you know, we just did Alfred was my number two. And my number one are both very unlike me in different ways. Mm-hmm. Alfred / Alistair is all like... He lies, he kills people, he doesn't have a great deal of empathy, he's kind of, like, antisocial a little bit. None of those things are like me.
Yeah. He's very different from you.
But it kind of gives you that release to, like...
It does.
Get an aspect of your emotions out there.
Yeah, both... honestly, all three of these characters have been very... cathartic for me, especially the top one is definitely like a Like, I miss him sometimes because he was such an outlet for me. But why don't you give... Should I just give my number one, or do you want to give your
number one? Why don't we go to number ones?
All right, well, since we're talking about it, I know it's out of order, but my number one is Shotgun McGillicuddy, the mad Irishman from...
I knew that was going to be it. You've talked about him multiple times.
I have.
I know this character. I love this character for
it's
you.
One of my favorite through lines ever. Just quick footnotes to everybody. He is a absolute psycho. Psycho bandit Irishman who was so psychotic that he basically got kicked out of New York during Wild West times because they were like, you got to get out of here. And went west to try and make money and fame and fortune. And he's the kind of, like, just to give you an idea of who this guy is, he stole, meeting the other player characters, I stole a bounty from them, led them on a chase through the woods, managed to get back to the sheriff before them to turn in the bounty. The sheriff told me that there was a clerical error and I wasn't getting as much as I was supposed to, so Shotgun immediately blew his fucking head off with a shotgun. And then just walked out of the deputy town. What's funny about this guy is I made him to just be like, I'm just going to make a bad guy. I had been talking to John, my game master. He's also the game master here. I had been talking to him, and John had been just kind of complaining that they didn't really have direction in the game. Like the few sessions, they were looking for direction. And I was like, all right, I'll give him direction. It'll be a different kind of direction. I'll make a bad guy character. He'll probably die in one session. It's cool. And then I'll make another character, but it'll kind of like bring them together. Like give him a miniature Thanos. You know what I mean?
Right.
That whole night was amazing. I stole the bounty from him, got back, killed the deputy. And then the game itself ends in a duel between me and this quick draw guy. The quick draw guy shoots me in the head. But I had made a tank. I just made an absolute tank. Somehow he survives the initial shot. And one of the player characters is a doctor. So he keeps... They for whatever fucking reason, they decided to keep me alive. I'm like, I don't know why they're doing this. But okay. So they kept me alive. And I was like, I'm not going to play him any differently. So Shotgun immediately goes... Gets, like, put up to be hung... And then before he can get hung, I can't remember what happened. There was some sort of, one of the players had something over the judge, and I was on the chopping block with everybody else. And the judge had they used that, so the judge was like, "All right, you're all free." But the sheriff, who hated me for killing his deputy, was like, "I'm gonna fucking kill you." So I immediately went to the whorehouse, the town whorehouse, and went to the madam and was like, "Sheriff wants to kill me. If you protect me, I'll be your guy. I'll be your guy. I will absolutely be your guy." So then the madam protects me from the sheriff, who's constantly looking for reasons to kill me while I'm running around. Plus, I kept the relationship between me and the guy who shot me in the head, like, blossomed into this weird frenemyship, which was it. The other thing is too, and I'm getting into the weeds about who the character was. He is dead. The through line of the character is one final time he betrays everybody again, and then in the final giant gunfight, the guy who shot him in the head shoots him in the heart, but he kills the sheriff before that happens. So he gets the sheriff, his nemesis, and then gets shot by the other guy. It's a great ending. What's so cathartic about him though is it was like the role-playing equivalent of booting up Grand Theft Auto and just running around and shooting everybody. Like, just anybody, like, it was funny because I would sit down at the table and it was like every player character reacted to me like a big cat had wandered onto the set and they didn't know how to deal with him, you know what I mean? Like, what do you do if Shotgun's here? Do you look at his eyes or do you just turn and run? Like that kind of stuff, because just anything went wrong, Shotgun would just start stabbing or shooting people, and like it would just throw the game into a tizzy. I shot like 3 or 4 horses. Like, Johnny got so mad at me because the bad guys were like hiding, and there was a ton of them, and he was like, "There's no way you're gonna take them on." I was like, "I bet you I can," and he's like, "How?" So I shot their fucking horses. And they fell over, and while they fell over, I jumped them and got the drop on all of them. And he was like, nobody's ever tried to shoot the horse before. What kind of psychopath shoots the horse? I was like, this psychopath, he shoots the horse. And, like, he is just an absolute terrible person.
It's so fucked up.
It's so fucked up. Everything he did was so fucked up. One of the bad guys sent one of the hookers after me to kill me. He got wind that there was something suspicious about her. What do you think he did? Do you think he was like, hey, are you trying to kill me? Do you think he captured her to interrogate her? He stabbed her in the heart in the middle of the tavern. Just immediately. Like, she was acting weird, so he just killed her. And it turned out he was all right and right. Like, it was so much fun. And then, like, the final whole arc of him was he just ended up partnered up with the guy who shot him in the head. And just the whole time, and I had told Johnny ahead of time, I was like, I'm going to corrupt him. I'm going to corrupt him by the end of this, I swear. And, like, I don't know that I fully corrupted him. I definitely got him to do some things that he probably wouldn't have normally done, including kill me, for that matter. But it was this whole, like, buddy cop thing that ended up working into this final gunfight that just it was perfect as far as I'm concerned. So I gotta say him because he's done. Like, his whole story is like, what's even funnier is the guy who plays the gunfighter is so obsessed with their relationship, he wrote a college paper on it. And then I don't know what for, but he told me. And then he actually said that at any time, if I want to bring Shotgun McGillicuddy back as a Bruja vampire, he will bring Two Guns John. I think his name was Two Guns John or Johnny Two Guns, something like that. He'll bring him back as a vampire. And we'll just say that they were vampires the whole time. And I was like, one day.
See, like, I love Westerns. Yeah. I don't know if you ever... Did you ever watch Lonesome Dove?
I did not watch Lonesome Dove. That's one I missed. I'm very aware of it, but I did not watch it.
It's got that giant Western epic thing that goes on for and involves all these characters and this big, like, landscapes. And some of my favorite Western books that I've read are very much the same thing. They can, like, span decades and are concluded until the death of a character. This is classic Western right here.
It really was.
Like, that's what you got. Like, this is that massive, expansive, like, story, epic story that ends with these two frenemies finally ending each other, or one ending the other one, the good guy winning.
Yeah.
And that character, that sounds like so much fun.
He was absolutely so much fun to play. So much fun to play. And it was great, too, because I could tell, even in a way, the Game Master didn't know what I was going to do when he'd put stuff in front of me. Like, there was one of his story threads was he ends up rescuing this 13-year-old girl from an abusive father. And the only reason he got stuck into it was he was collecting debts for the madam from the father. And he ends up just, like, rescuing the girl. Johnny even was like, I had no idea what was going to happen there. I thought you were going to shoot the girl and, like, blow the father's head off and burn the house down. I didn't know what was going to happen. I was like, that's good. Yeah. This is a great character. I love that he was just always, like, everybody would sit down and be like, what shotgun are you going to do today? You know, and I just loved that. And I would just look at him and be like, I don't know. It depends on what kind of mood I am in when the thing happens.
And, you know, like, if you look at Westerns and, like, actual historical characters from the Old West, there are characters from history even that are like this guy.
Yeah.
They're sociopaths and manic. And they get away with it for a certain point, and then they meet a bloody end.
Yep.
And you naturally sort of organically, like, the West was, it's the Wild West for a reason.
Yeah.
It's just your character thrived there for a while.
And that was and there was that self-awareness about Shotgun. Like, he's like, I know what's happening here. Everybody knows what's happening here. I'm killing people till somebody kills me. That's what's happening here, you know?
Right.
I love that. I love that. So what's your number one?
All right, my number one is actually an antisocial character. That's the reason why I liked him. He's not as like extreme by any means. He's a good guy, but he's an antisocial character.
This has got to be the cleric, right? You've mentioned
it is
him
the
before.
Cleric.
I knew it.
Richmond Winterborn.
I knew it.
I just that the antisocial guys are so much fun. Mm-hmm. When I play Alfred, he's got a bit of an antisocial thing going on too. But Richmond, I really doubled into it. The cleric, it's Dungeons and Dragons. I came up with you in Dungeons and Dragons, you have your various attributes. I made charisma my dump stat. I had like a -1 or a -2 in that. So I wrapped my character's identity around being this guy who heals people. He's a cleric. He's a support class, but he's also kind of an asshole. And like, I've had so many of my fellow, like, I ended up getting really good at playing a funny asshole character. that sort of like comical, just like dastardly, like adorable, like asshole kind of thing. Richmond ended up being that guy because, I mean, every time somebody would come to him for help or he needed to do something as a cleric, you know, heal me or charge me, he's like, what are you talking about? Just go rub dirt on it, kick dirt on it, walk it off. Don't be such a crybaby. You know, he would make fun of them for whining too much and needing his cleric help or be annoyed with them for being too nice or something. He's like, how are they going to learn to take care of themselves if we keep bringing them back from the dead?
That's amazing.
And it was just so much fun. And I remember one night I even had one girl. She had to like get off of the call for like 10 minutes because I had her laughing so hard because of something stupid Richmond said. And the key that I found to playing Richmond as an asshole but not an asshole character is everything that he does pushes social boundaries within the world, but doesn't get in the direct way of anything that the other characters are trying to accomplish.
That's an opposite approach of Shotgun.
Right.
Well, Shotgun did not give a fuck. Yeah. Half the time he was the antagonist, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a different, completely different role, like, and also it's a different game and stuff like that. But like for Richmond, like I wanted him to be cohesive within the group and for us to like go along our story. But I also wanted to really play him antisocial. So I played him I'm friends with several people who have various conditions that may have them have a harder time fitting into social situations. I've come to understand, you know, what their needs are as individuals and have really respected and appreciated the things that they've had to, the challenge they've had to do and how they see the world. And then it made me realize, you know, like after a bit, I was starting to kind of play Richmond in the same way I was playing these guys, but like I was able to play it so much better because my friends have shown me like this is like a real person with real like challenges and they don't understand the world that's going on around them. And when I realized that, I also noticed the other characters started realizing that about Richmond, too.
Mm-hmm.
All of the other characters got really protective of Richmond because he walked through life like not understanding human interaction.
You know,
he just didn't.
You know, it's crazy. I love characters like that because there's those moments where you can get empathy for them. Like, that's the trick, you know? And that's, like, I'm playing a character in your game right now that has not aired yet, Ordo Scriptorium, who is, he's kind of a nightmare. but in a very different way than Shotgun. But, like, I have tried very hard to put little flashes of sympathetic moments for him where, like, oh, I kind of can see through his eyes a little bit more. And, like, I don't know that they've worked in that case, but they definitely worked for Shotgun. And it was hard for Shotgun because it's like the first thing I did was kill somebody they all knew. So, like, how do I then make them go, Shotgun's not so bad, you know? So, like, and that's what you've done with Richmond. And that's such an interesting story. The story of, like, taking somebody who might not be like understanding somebody is different from you and like being able to like be okay with that anyway is such a hard thing for humans to do, but it's absolutely the most beautiful thing when they can accomplish it. You know, there's the Big Bang Theory, and I know nerds hate Big Bang Theory, and I understand. I understand why you hate Big Bang Theory. They make fun of us constantly in that. And just for the record, people who made Big Bang Theory, nerds aren't all nerds rolled in one. Like, it's not like that nerd is every type of nerd that has ever existed. That's just not how it works. But if you take away the nerd stuff and you look at just the relationship stuff, that's when I really get into that show, especially the whole relationship with Sheldon, who is a fucking nightmare person. I don't know how much of Big Bang... Have you watched Big Bang at all? Or
I've seen it. I haven't really seen season after season or anything.
If you watch it from start to finish, it's like 11 or 12 seasons. If you watch it from start to finish, which I have many times with my wife, the coolest thing about the show, the best thing about the show, is Sheldon starts off this completely unlikable asshole that, like, the whole time you're like, why is anybody hanging out with this guy? Why are you spending time there? Why are you around him? Why are you dealing with him? He says the worst shit. And what they do over the course of 11 and 12 seasons is give you this feeling of, like, empathy for him, where you get like, oh, he just doesn't know how to talk to people. Like, his brain does not work in a way that would allow him to communicate in the ways that the people do. You know what I mean? And I just think that is so cool, because you get this level, and that's what I love about the show. The nerd jokes, like, take them or leave it. But if you just watch the relationship part of the show, there is this level of, like, watching people who aren't like Sheldon have to deal with Sheldon and not quit on him, no matter how irritating he can get. And it actually allows him to better understand them at the same time. And that is just such a cool dance. And when you can accomplish that in a role-playing game, it's absolutely beautiful. And it sounds like you did that with Richmond. And that should be a point of pride at all times, you know?
You know, I hadn't really thought about it quite in those terms, but that is exactly what I did with Richmond. Like, I established a backstory that I slowly revealed to the other characters, where his father, he came from a noble background. That was part of the game. His father was, like, kind of, like, basically abusive. He left home at, like, the age of 16 as a result of it. Like, I had, like, moments, and they were kind of presented comically. But there were moments where, like, you know, when my father, you know, left me to sleep with the dogs outside in the kennels that one night, I started to feel good about animals. I became very good friends with all of our dogs. You know, I kind of started, like, building off of this thing where he had, like, this... He hated his dad because his dad was an asshole.
Obviously.
I think every time there's a spell in D&D called Aid, where you touch somebody and you can help, like, imbue them with inspiration, or it's not really inspiration because it's a cleric, but it's aid. It's magical aid. And I would color it with something along the lines of, I'm going to tell you the same thing my father told me when he was trying to inspire me to work harder. If you fuck up, I don't love you anymore. You know? And all that kind of, like, random, like, stuff like that just made him more of a person.
Right, right. Which is terrible, but at the same time, like, it's funny and super sad, but it binds you to that character a little bit more, you know? Because you're like,
it makes him more of a person.
Oh, you got shit in your past. That's why you're like this. You're just not an awful person that's just walking around doing awful stuff all the time. I love it when you're able to do that with characters. And Richmond sounds awesome. I wish I had been present for him, honestly.
Someday I'd love to play him again. That game unfortunately got cut a little short. The DM wasn't able to continue on with the game. One day I'll come back to Richmond.
You just make him an NPC and finish his story yourself.
Yeah, I probably will at some point.
Just pull a Cody Rhodes. Sometimes you got to finish your own story, baby. That's what you got to do. Well, we've gone 54 minutes. Do you want to go into the other stuff that you want to touch on, or save that for a whole nother episode?
I think, you know, we've covered our top favorite characters. We were going to do a deep dive into, you know, archetypes as characters and all this other stuff.
But I mean, that could be a whole nother episode. We could do that next, in 2 weeks, we could do like a character, like how to make characters, like do's and don'ts and stuff like that. I think that'd be a great episode.
I think so too. I think we've come to the conclusion of our favorite characters, and I think this is a good place to wrap it up for today.
Now that we've done boring planning in front of people for the next episode,
something to look forward to, guys.
Yes,
look
forward to it.
All right. Well, before we jump out of here, Zach, is there anything you want to shout out?
We have Ordo Scriptorium coming sometime in the near future. Alongside of it, we will be releasing a visual/audio podcast where Wizard kindly game masters for myself and three other players through our first hunt in the game. So really excited for all of that to come out. Please keep your eyes out for it. We have a bunch of other really cool TTRPG stuff coming out very soon. So please just keep your eyes out for that on the channel. And if I might just plug something that has nothing to do with the channel. I don't know if I did. Did I do this on Wiz before? Did I plug my kids' podcast on Wiz before?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I do want to just plug this once because I was so proud of her. My 8-year-old is making her own podcast with me. It is 20 to 30 minutes of just a 7-year-old vamping about 7-year-old stuff. It's just something so wonderful and nice about it. So you can just check it. It's called the Everything Stella Podcast, and that's only on Spotify. But I have promised her that I would plug it on some things, so I have now plugged it on two different things. I think I did it on the video game podcast then, but she actually writes up little itineraries every time that I'm keeping. Oh, nice. She did all the art for everything, and she sits around and actually helps me edit, so I am...
Oh, that's real sweet.
It's really sweet. Like, I was very skeptical to do it at first, but it has been a very positive experience for her and myself.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's real sweet. Okay, well, for you plugged a lot of this stuff. As always, I'll be plugging wizardsrespite.com. All of these episodes will be posted there. It's a website in which we dive into all things CTRPG, just like we do here. I have articles about all kinds of things related to the industry. Also, I got shirts that are coming in, and they're getting launched. This one here, Bring It. With a D20. I'm going to be doing some more that are a little bit more themed for Dungeons & Dragons, and then some more that are just general TTRPG. So yeah, check that out. And yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up for today.
You need to do a reverse of that shirt. That just says one of those days, and it's a one.
Yeah. As a matter of fact...
Look for it coming soon. Look for it coming soon. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for everybody for listening. And until next time, keep rolling them dice.